Good afternoon. It's March 9th at 1:30 p.m. Thank you for listening to kpcradio.com. This is Michael Iasconi with Common Sense 101. Today, I am here with Yep Prim, one of our professors on campus in communications. And I wanted to start with a little introduction of what brought you to Pierce College or into communications, and how long have you been a professor in that field?
Sure. Well, there was no direct line of how I ended up here. After graduate school, a mentor of mine said, hey, you looking for a job? Because I had taught a little bit during graduate school. And I said, yes. He's like, well, contact Pierce College, this person. I contacted, interviewed. I came here, started from there part-time, and over the years, obviously taught more places, more courses, more experiences, and then got hired full for a tenure position 4 years ago, and I just got tenure, so been here since roughly 2006, 2007.
Very nice, very nice. Hey. What brought you to that field as an education? You know, when you left high school, why did you go in that route?
Sure. Well, I was young, so at that time I didn't know what I wanted to do. So, you know, the girlfriend I had at the time said, hey, go back to school right after high school. I was like, okay, let's hang out. Did that. Finally accumulated enough credits to transfer. Transferred in with a history major, though. And then first semester of history, I decided, wrong path. And then I had a friend who was taking a communication studies class. He's like, hey, you know, take this class next semester. Took it. Fell in love with it. And I think I fell in love with the social aspects of stuff, so I was able to connect with people. I was a very talkative person. And then you learn that communication is not only about speaking and only connecting, but there's different avenues, argumentation, persuasion, rhetoric, media, and that sort of took over and decided to continue.
Now, today we're supposed to talk about the common sense or the areas that we lack common sense with communication. And, you know, there's two approaches here that I have. And one is it really a lack of common sense? Mm-hmm. Or do we have a lack of critical thinking?
Those are two good ways to look at it, that dichotomy. The way I look at it is first, I think, as students, as we're learning, as we learn how to learn. But I think it's experience. To be honest with you, I think people have the critical thinking skills. I think they have common sense, but we don't fine-tune those or put those together. And how we do that is through just experiences. Now, some of us are, as I said earlier, early bloomers, late bloomers. Some of us takes us time to pick things up. But when it comes to students, in regards to how they pick information up, and obviously in regards to communication studies itself, it's about doing and learning, because we're programmed certain ways. We're born into certain silos or families, cultures, experiences. And within those aspects, we develop certain communication skills, things we pick up on, things we don't. And everything influences. So we try to build on those commonalities, those common sense aspects. Critical thinking is something that we're always working on, and I'll be honest. I mean, I go back to 18 years old, 19 years old, was I a critical thinker? I don't think so. The only thing I thought about was, okay, do I have money in my pocket to go to Taco Bell, and how much does it cost? But that was the only way I would think about it. Now it's, well, let's dig in and what it means to be academically critical and so forth. So I think it evolves and changes over time. So students do have it. You just got to give them the opportunity to sort of understand, well, I have it, I can apply it, now I understand what it is. And I think that's, it's a juggling act, but, you know, we try to pull that out.
Do you think that technology, like distractions, we're in an era of ADD, attention deficit disorder, we have short-term attention spans, at least, you know, the next generation coming in does. And the reason that I'm bringing this into play is that, you know, I read a really simple question, and it says the red house was built with red bricks, the yellow house was built with yellow bricks, the blue house was built with blue bricks. What was the greenhouse built with? And then it gives you two choices, green bricks or glass and metal, because people will perceive this question as a greenhouse you grow plants in.
Correct.
And when we look at the lead-in, it tells you that the equation, so to speak, is bricks.
Yeah, we'll follow out.
But we this seems to be a common error, so to speak, in thought.
Correct. Yeah, and that's, you know, if we were going to fallacies, you know, in argumentation we teach fallacies and so forth, and then, you know, that could be deemed a fallacy, the way we look at things. We are, by nature, pattern absorbing people, I say. We look for patterns, and you're right, the way that you look at that, and you would obviously say, okay, well, if I'm not a critical thinker, you know, I'll just follow the norm or the status quo, and then, yeah, it would be a green brick or whatever that color is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's when you try to open up that concept, and I might be veering off here, but, you know, what we've done, and it's not a K through 12 thing, but I think we've taken away that creativity. Although we have all this technology, but we're also taking away the creativity, where information is already readily available, where we're not trying to dig in, inquire, and so forth. And technology is good, I think, and personally, in my opinion, I use a lot of technology, whether it's social media or applications and so forth. But it is a distraction in the classroom, because what we tend to do is, just like today, I asked a question with, I forgot the language that you use, but the word, and I was asking him, what does this mean? And quickly, a student raises his hand within 10 seconds after some other discussion. As I'm looking at him, he's got his phone in his hand. He defined it through his phone, you know, the dictionary. So it's one of those things where, well, I want you to read the textbook. I want you to inquire. And, you know, it can be detrimental, but I think it's something that we can all pick up on and learn from, but utilize. But it can be distracting. It's it reminds me of the ghost in the machine. It's this concept that I remember studying in graduate school. But yeah.
Now, with this introduction, I'll stay on this topic. Sure. The introduction of technology, how is this affecting the communication with the students? How do the students interact with their professor? Are the interactions correct? Are the approach or the address to the professor correct? Are the emails, mm-hmm. you know, are they addressing them as a functioning citizen, or do you get, like, you know, from, you know, mm-hmm. Christopher Chris hangs in a tree on hotmail.com and you don't, you know, and you're trying to put things together and whether or not this is his first name or his last name or
right.
So how is this affecting your interactions with the students?
Mm-hmm. Well, from a social standpoint, I think, you know, when we communicate, I think with technology, we've sort of hindered that. You know, we use 140 characters to get our point across, but it's not how it is in real life. And the face-to-face contact that we have, it takes into effect the nonverbals. It takes into effect the culture, the context, what we call the rhetorical situation, what's happening. And we can't just take something that's electronic and I don't want to say hide behind it, but utilize that to get our point across. Although it's important that we can reach across continents, and it's great, but it's a factor that I see, and it's good to have it. But in terms of, you know, when I see my students in the classroom, I want them to look at me in the eye. I want them to be comfortable when I look at them in the eye. I want them to see the facial expressions that I have. I want to see their facial expressions. I don't want them ignoring the fact that they might be nervous, whether it's a public speaking class, a group communication class. I teach group communication, and we see students come together, but then they meet, and then they automatically go to the cell phones. So it's like, no, I want you to interact. Put those away. Let's learn about each other, you know, not from, you know, Facebook or, you know, MySpace is done, but Instagram, but I want you all to speak to one another and inquire. That's what it goes back to.
So it's almost like technology is removing the personal aspect.
It can. Yeah, it does. It does. And it's harder for us to be more personable, although, you know, theories do suggest that eventually we do get our point across in regards to emotion and other things, but it's harder to get there. It's difficult, and obviously there's miscues and miscommunication, we'll call it, and that might arise conflict.
Now, we're dealing with, you know, a lack of common sense, as people want to put it, with communication. How does this The fact that these bridges aren't there to be able to interact with a person face to face, because there is that element of anxiety or fear. How are these situations affecting the student's performance? How is it affecting their academic performance or their finances or their...
Well, you know, we as faculty, and I'll step back because I think communication has a lot to do when we're teaching and pedagogy and so forth. When we communicate, we're sending information, you know, back and forth. And a lot of times, depending, again, how we learn, how we intake information, distractions and so forth, all those have a concept. It's, you know, I use the cliche, knowledge is power. But we're so inundated with so much information that it's hard for us to sort of organize and pick out information that's going to best suit what we want. Another example is a student gets to the 2 year, right? They're like, okay, I'm here to go to school, but I really don't know what I want to do in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, but I'm taking these classes. Why are they important? Why am I taking general ed courses? We have to be able to connect with that individual student, but also understand why they're like that or the way they think. And it goes back to generational gaps and identity. And I know some people say millennial, Gen X, and so forth. But it is the way we have socialized or been socialized generationally and so forth. So as faculty, what we have to do is take the information that we have, look at our students. So going back to communication, understand them, their values, their needs, their wants, how they intake information, how they connect with what's happening right now, and make it relevant. And once you make it relevant and build trust, mutual trust, that brings respect into the classroom. And if students sort of trust you and you trust them, that creates an environment for dialogue that's beneficial. So if it's a comms course you're taking or a poli-sci class you're taking, well, it's important to understand this because later on it's going to benefit you. And it is about the benefit that we get either at the time or in the future. So going back to, you know, how it affects what they do in regards to their finances, time, and the future, if it's relevant and they trust people, in my personal opinion, and you respect that, mutual respect going back and forth, students are able to stay in there, pick up, and take something away.
So at this point, I feel that the statement, a lack of common sense, merely just falls to the impact that technology is having on the student right now. In the regards to removing the personal aspect, removing the social interaction, and like you said, in a group setting, everyone immediately goes to their digital interaction instead of the personal interaction. And I have a list here of things that are deemed to be common sense about communication, and I want to just throw some of them at you and prompt you, so to speak, is as far as how are students or people in this current time lacking these skills. And I mean, to me, when I read this list, a lot of these things are common sense, but unfortunately, this list appears consistently with being an area that people lack skills in. And earlier we talked about body language. Correct. and you know, speaking clearly. How are we seeing in this current generation a lack of these skills with people?
Well, I mean, again, it could be cultural when we look at high context, low context cultures and the way they express themselves or get their information across. But as an example, when we look at body language and so forth, I can state something verbally, but it can completely mean something else by the way I'm standing, I'm looking at you. I can be looking at you right now across the table with a smile and say, you're an amazing person. But it's different if I'm looking at you with maybe a different tone of voice without a smile and saying, you're an amazing person. It sounds the same right now because over the radio, people obviously can't see what we're doing. But if I'm smiling, that reinforces that symbolic aspect of that meaning of what I'm trying to say. And common sense aspect is, not everyone's going to smile. Not everyone's going to be happy. We try not to judge a book by its cover. And sometimes we get inundated with, you know, miscues and so forth. But I mean, if someone's smiling, you know, common sense is that they're happy. If they're just smiling and they're not happy, then there's some other issue that underlies things. So that's one thing.
I like that. Now, there's a statement here that says, make all important calls before noon. How does this apply You know, let's really look at this, and how does this apply to a student? How does this apply to a just an individual as far as making maybe a phone call to your doctor, mm-hmm. or maybe, you know, someone that's getting ready to make an appointment with a counselor? Mm-hmm. Are we really in a generation right now where everyone chooses to call at 6 o'clock in the evening?
Well, I'll you know what? I'll look at it from a personal examples that I'm getting. I get students who email me at 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night, sometimes in the morning, 1 or 2 in the morning, you know, the day before an assignment is due. And it does speak a little bit about it, but again, it's a variety of students that we get. And I tell my students, I'll give you an example of how I try to express the importance of, for example, what we're talking about here in regards to phone calls, emails, and so forth. Don't procrastinate. That's, you know, some skills, some soft skills that we learn, time management. And I tell my students, I said, if you email me at 11 p.m. on Thursday evening and there's an assignment due, let's say Friday, as an example, at 12 p.m. right in the afternoon, I understand that I'm doing a million other things. I have office hours and so forth. I might not be able to get back to you. And what's going to happen is you're going to miss that assignment or you're not going to do it correctly. So what also happens is by shifting accountability a little bit and understanding expectations of them and they understand expectations of you, that eliminates that challenge where I've been used to getting up at, I don't know, 11, 12 in the afternoon and living my life the way I am, that now, I don't know, I don't want to use this term, but I'm an adult now and you know, I have to take on responsibilities. And a part of going to college and, you know, it's a aspect of it is learning these skills. Accountability, responsibility, time management, all that stuff.
I like where you took that. You know, initially mm-hmm. I was looking at phone calls and doctors and mm-hmm. all of those other situations. But when you brought in emailing the professor at, uh-huh. at an adequate time, to me, even last night, I sent over the script to the radio station at 10 p.m., mm-hmm. not really taking into consideration anyone else's schedule. But if I had would have taken the opportunity to send it over at 10 a.m., mm-hmm. the people in the studio would have been less stressed.
Correct.
And there would have been more time to look over things and give me feedback if needed.
And that's nonverbal right there. You took the time, respective, of sending it out, relieving the stress from others. And that communicates that you are punctual, you're committed, for example, and it also builds credibility. And that's certain things that sometimes we don't always see, and that builds up later on while we do things and, or make mistakes, and that's fine.
It's nice. Nice to feel at fault on the air. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, moving down this list, mm-hmm. there's engaging your listener. Is this something that we're starting to see really happen as far as a lack of engagement, a lack of attention being given towards the person you're interacting with?
And are we referring to this inside the classroom, outside the classroom, in general?
In general.
In general,
yeah. May it be between the students in the class, the students mm-hmm. and the professor, you outside the class with people mm-hmm. in a grocery store.
Okay. I mean, from people come up to me and say, okay, you know, how do I become a better communicator? And I can refer back to certain things that we learn in the classroom and pinpoint certain things that we can do. But it's stuff that we learn along the way accompanying the concepts and the theories, but also through those social interactions that we have. So if I am in line and someone engages in a conversation with me, if I'm on a plane, what I want to do personally, I mean, you know, a lot of times we want to express ourselves and get our point across, but referring back to the concept, I tell my students, in order to be a good speaker, you have to be a good listener. And sometimes, you know, we have to listen just to listen when there's no information to attain, but it allows us to build that communication. And that can, again, go back to a theory or concept where we're trying to reduce this anxiety that we have between people, and people might talk and talk and talk in order to for them to be more comfortable. And sometimes you have to be that, you know, that corkboard or that wall where you take in information. Listening is very important. Now, some people know how to give information precisely in a timely manner. Some people don't. So if I'm sitting down in, on a plane and someone talks to me, you know, I would hopefully understand to listen, but I hope they would allow me to speak back to them too. But that's not always the case. So it goes back to reading the person. If you know this person's not going to stop talking to you, you know, people are like this and that's fine. then sometimes you have to sort of give them nonverbal cues where it's my turn, whether it's slightly opening your mouth or nodding your head or even at points just turning around for them to get the point. And that's nonverbal in itself. So we learn these skills, and it's important for us to understand that. So, it's a give and take. But it should come naturally. And sometimes it doesn't, and that's fine because there's certain things that hinder it. But it's a give and take.
On a daily basis, what is the most common flaw that you see within communication? Whether it be just walking down the street or waiting in line for the ATM, is there a lack of eye-to-eye contact? Mm-hmm. What is the one thing that you fear the most, so to speak, mm-hmm. about where society may go if these behaviors keep progressing?
Okay. I think it's situational, and I like the fact that you use the term behavior. From a communicative standpoint, you know, our behaviors communicate things. So there's always an underlying aspect to it, and we try to control certain behaviors, but to also communicate things outward. So it's situational, I would say. So a few things that I think are important when we're looking at, let's say, interaction between, I think, as Americans, we talked about this in class today, eye contact's important, right? Because it allows us to establish, you know, credibility, that you're paying attention, I'm understanding, all those things. Is there a lack of eye contact sometimes with my students? Yeah. It might be that they're nervous giving a speech, and that's understandable in that context. But if I speak to them outside of class, they'll engage with me eye contact greatly. But I think one thing I we're talking about behavioral. I think the issue that we have with communication these days is there's no one way to communicate. We have to understand that. And I think some people think that they're sort of gilded in this one area of how to express information or themselves communicate that. And it's not one way. Due to technology, due to culture, due to personal experiences, traditions, values, our belief system, all this gets mixed up. And what we have to do is meet that person where they're at, as we say, and try to adjust our communication to them and them to us. And if it's a two-way street going back and forth, I guarantee you, two people from two different parts of the world come together, they can communicate. And that's the beauty of it. Because we use verbals, nonverbals, and somehow we'll get to the point. So going back to it, some flaws, I look at them as challenges, but we can overcome those challenges.
I've really, really enjoyed this time with you. I've spent more time engaged with you than paying attention to where we're supposed to go on this mm-hmm. script, and we've run out of time. And I wanted to thank everyone that's listening for lending us your ears and your time. And you've been listening to Common Sense 101 with Yeprem and Michael on kpcradio.com. Thank you very much for your time. Signing off.